This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 440 for November 2nd of 2018. All new Chevrolet Silverado, engineering the franchise. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems. And by BorgWarner, propulsion solutions that support a clean, energy-efficient world.
Mr. Gary Vasilash.
How are you?
Man, I am so glad we're here in the studio doing the show.
So we missed last week.
Yeah.
But I had the opportunity to do something last week that you would have, like, really, really liked to do.
Like what?
I got to drive the 2019 Acura NSX, which has a top speed of 191 miles per hour, on the track at the Transportation Research Center as fast as I dared.
And that was how fast?
I couldn't even look. I had professional drivers sitting in the seat next to me going, go, 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 stop! It was good, clean fun.
Did you go, you know, so those are high bank turns there.
No, it was a flat road course.
A road course? Oh, they've added that. I didn't know they had a road course there because...
That place is amazing.
No, it is. But, I mean, years ago, and I mean decades ago, when I was with Road and Track, we did high-speed testing there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's high-banked oval. You didn't get on that part
of
it,
huh? No, we were on a...
Because you could have gone 191 there.
Oh, I'm sure I could have. Or maybe I could have thought about it a little bit.
But, the thing that
could have said you did.
I would have put my knitting down and...
The thing that floored me is you can go through the turns hands off the wheel. It's perfectly
banked.
If
you're on a high bank turn.
Yeah, if you're on there.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I am jealous. I wish I had been there and doing that. That's cool.
But we're here now, and we've got a great show.
We're going to have a lot of fun. Because we got Bob Gritzinger from Ward's Intelligence with
us. All right.
Yeah.
Glad to be here. Good to see you guys. Wish I was at the NSX drive.
See?
We sent Christy. I think she had a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good fun.
Okay, but we got to let everybody know our special guest for today's show is Tim Herrick, the chief engineer for GM's full-size trucks. And Tim, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
We got a ton of questions to ask you, but I should let the audience know, too. If you all want to get in on the action, shoot us an email. Send it to viewermail@autoline.tv. And I'm not going to promise we get to all of them. Keep them short, brief, to the point, and you're more likely to have your question asked. Or you can give us a phone call. And the number there is 620-288-6546. And we're going to start out with questions first before the audience gets in on it.
All right.
Oh, and he brought a truck.
And he brought a truck.
Two tons of truck sitting here, too.
This is a massive, massive program. Not just truck, but the whole program. I want to say, I don't know if the numbers are still right, but it was something like if you just broke the GM truck program off of GM as its own standalone corporation, it'd be like in the Fortune 50 or something like that.
Well,
it's
into
a huge program.
Well into the Fortune 50. Yeah, it's everything for us.
So you want a lightweight, you want to bring new powertrains, you need to update interior, exterior sheet metal. So I want to know, first of all, what's it like for you as the chief engineer of this program to go into Mary Barra and the board and say, I need buku bucks to do this program.
How many billions, right?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Well, when you first get told, hey, this is the job we'd like you to do, you get really excited, you know. And I remember I called my dad and I said, Dad, I got the opportunity of a lifetime. Got really excited. Hung up the phone. He said, great, I'm so proud of you, son. And then after I hung up the phone, I kind of like, holy cow, but you know what I'm going to do. But it's extremely exciting and rewarding to have, you know, the might of General Motors behind you and Chevy and GMC and Cadillac for the whole architecture, to go and talk to the board and say, hey, we need this number of dollars. And I just
You could throw those dollars out there.
No, that's okay. We probably won't break any of that news. It'd be the last time I did. But you know, it's daunting when you think about it. And then to have them say, "Son, does it does it really take that much money to bring out a whole new architecture? You know, and these guys are people that have run other companies and quite famous. And it's like, yes, it does. And here's why it takes so much, especially with this. This is the first time maybe in 30 years we fully, I mean, everything on that truck is brand new, rethought, repurposed. Everything's done from the ground up. You know, from stem to stern, you know, port to starboard, from the waterline to the roof.
Why'd you do that? Why didn't you just take the existing truck, make a whole lot of more refinements and improvements, and save a ton of money in the process?
It was time to re-architect the truck. You know, we needed to come down a test weight class. We needed to bring our fuel economy up. We wanted to get a new look and a new proportion is right for us. Our manufacturing facilities needed a significant upgrade. You know, as all those things came together, this is something that we really needed to do and you know, move the wheels, re-architect the truck to be bigger, bolder, also to have more differentiation than we ever have. So really, it had been a number of years, and kind of funny, I'd worked on almost all of them, you know, from when I worked at I started in Janesville, worked on what we called the old RV, started in 83, and then worked on what we called the 400 in Fort Wayne, and then moved up to engineering after that, and then went down to Arlington when we converted that from a car plant to a truck plant. So then we came back up in the two generations previous to this. We call it the 900. Worked on that, was the chief engineer on that, and then worked on all of them. And so all that knowledge and all those years of experience with all those people have kind of coalesced at this spot.
So in many ways, Tim, this is the franchise, as John alluded to.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a key vehicle. When you started, when you guys had nothing, right?
Yeah.
Perhaps a list of what were the elements that the new truck had to embody. What was at the top of that list from an engineering point of view? What did you guys want to achieve?
Well, we knew that we wanted to re-architect the truck. We wanted to go with a new look. We wanted to go with new proportions. We wanted to, see what that looked like, the wheelbase increasing that 4 inches. The truck's an inch and a half taller. Actually, the advanced design guys went out and they had a proportion model, and we drug it out maybe about a year ago, 8 months ago, put it on what we call the Ponderosa, and there's a story I won't tell you about that. But we put it on with the Ponderosa and looked at it, so did we stay true to that vision model? And so they had that model, so we went out and we, from an engineering standpoint, we like that. We love the way that looks. We're going to go after that, and what do we have to do to make that so? You know, then here's the weight savings, here's the test weight class we're going to put it in, here's the propulsion units we're going to put in, the transmissions, you know, here's all the technology that we're going to put on. Just start to, roll those out and talk to the engineers and give that information to the studio, let them design and let us make sure that we can validate and put it on the road.
But you still have to keep it conservative. I mean, we're talking truck buyers here.
Yeah.
Things don't change quickly.
No.
This is like almost the equivalent of Porsche for trucks.
Sure.
So were there things that you pushed too far on that you said, well, we need to dial that back, we're not going to do that?
Nothing comes to mind. You know, you go to the clinic and they're a fairly conservative, you know, group, right? They're very particular about the trucks. And we had over 7,000 respondents that we went to clinic with and looked at it. I can't think of one thing where we're going to push really hard. We had to kind of back up here. But what we did do is that we have two very distinct brands. And with what we brought out, we have two totally different looks, where before we would share maybe a little bit more. This time we went in, hey, we're going to go after these customers with this truck, and we're going to go after these customers. And, you know, through the depth and breadth of both of those, we'll be much more successful.
So this is Chevy and GMC.
Yeah, Chevy and GMC. You can see the Chevy that we brought in here. You know, it's a distinctive look, and you've seen our GMC. Mm-hmm. A lot of them on the road. That's a very distinctive look. You don't get the two confused, anymore.
Not at all.
Not at all. And, you know, you can stare at them for a while and you'll figure out what we share in it, but not a lot. The stuff that the customer sees and touches is different.
Door inners, stuff like that, right?
Sure.
So I'm going to quote you to you, okay? When this truck was being launched, you said, quote, truck customers value capability and functionality above all else.
Yes.
Explain that to me.
Well, they buy them because they love them and they're sexy and they're cool, right? And they're more in vogue than they've ever been. But they're still working with them. So the function is extremely important to them. They look at it, you know, they don't have a box on it because it looks cool. They have a box on it because the customers do work with it, whether they're hauling stuff in the box, they're trailering with it. So functionality and its day-to-day use is extremely important.
So what'd you do to that box?
Well, the box, thanks for asking, Gary. It's the box is all
we're
new.
Get into Pascals here or something, right?
I hope the megapascals, Bob. Megapascals.
I know.
Pascal crap.
Yeah,
okay.
Not the little
Pascals,
the big stuff. But the megapascals. No, we re-architected the whole box, and that's the business end for the truck, right? They use that. What's really unique with this, and we took the clinic and the customers, one of the highest things that we clinicked was the architecture of this box. We made it darn near 7 inches wider, 6 3/4 inches wider, and we re-architected how that went together from the sides to the depth of draw that we could put on the wheelhouse. We decoupled that so we could make it wider and push that inner within an inch of the outer. And then we have a separate piece for the wheelhouse. And then with the same roll formed, we increased the strength of the roll form. So, yeah, you can throw a toolbox in that and do even better. And then we did that, architected that so that we have 3 tie-downs in each corner for 12, 9 more that you can put in. And the biggest thing, our tagline here, is that it has more volume for our short box than our competitor's standard box by volume. And the customers really love that. They really appreciate that.
Tim, as you got a chance to do a completely clean sheet, yeah. I'm sure you've added a lot to this vehicle. Are there offsets that you can do with a clean sheet design to keep cost down, or does it just go up anyway?
Yeah, you know, kind of the previous conversation back to the board of directors, and I'll weave it in here, is that, son, why is it not all aluminum? Mm-hmm. You know, Our number one competitor went with an all-aluminum truck, explained to me. And so with a clean sheet of paper, we were able to use a mixed material strategy that I know we've talked about a number of times, but 8 different steels just in the cab. The swing metal's aluminum. We have composite rear leaf springs, second stage helper springs. You know, we know that there's more than one element in the periodic table, and we went out to use every one of them on the new truck. So with a clean sheet of paper, you're able to do that, not only from just what materials you use, but then with new body shops and new bill of process, if you will, for us, is that how you chunk those materials up, say, on the cab. There's a number of different stampings in it, but you're able to control the material, its grade, its thickness, you know, and take advantage of that all the way through to get you the 430 pounds out. So the offset being that we're not as aluminum intensive. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the media right now about how expensive that is. So we think we have a great cost advantage there. And then so we can re-architect it that way. And, you know, our competitor that used all aluminum, they were always a test weight class above us. They've jumped down 2 with their 700 pounds. We're waiting to find that truck, but they're 700, claim 700 pounds. When we came down 430, we're within pounds of what they were able to do and at a significant advantage. So there's some offsets there. And then there's other offsets as you redesign that, hey, we're smarter now on certain things as you re-architect it. I think we can be lighter and less expensive.
One of those things you can be really smart on, I mean, we should move into powertrain and not overlook significant changes there. It's a carryover 6.2 and 5.3, but I'm told not carryover.
No.
With this active fuel
dynamic fuel management. Yeah, fuel management was what we had in the previous generation.
8.4,
and go back and forth. What we have here is dynamic fuel management. What that is that we have a valve at each cylinder within the lifter that we can energized or not energized. So we can actually turn that off, open it up, whatever we want to do for that cylinder. We can deactivate any number of cylinders, but what we have are 17 different fractions that we use, one being all eight, and then multiples of those fractions, a third, two-fifths, you know, we do have a half. We use all these different fractions.
Half. And it, wow.
Yes. Yeah. Well, which would be the four.
The four, okay.
Right. But as half but what's really, no. what Bob, what's really cool about this technology is that you don't think of it as 8-4, 8-4. You think of it as the eight cylinders as long as the Earth is, right? And as you roll through them, the algorithm, which is an exclusive for us, at Chevrolet and at GMC, that you just roll through those changes. So acoustically, you're not picking it up. You may be at a third for, you know, for a fraction of a second, for 2 seconds, and then you jump to a half, and then, hey, you push into it, I get all eight. So it's there on demand, and it's there, you know, it's not there when you don't need it to get the great fuel economy.
Yeah, no, I can vouch for that because, you know, we drove the truck, and I tried to trick it, you know, get heavy onto the accelerator, back out, get back into it. I couldn't feel any change. It just seemed like a normal powertrain, but, you know, it was indicating it was on two cylinders and could jump to eight like that and then down to six or whatever.
And so get you what kind of fuel economy gain in a percentage?
Well, overall,
5%.
5%, not just for the dynamic fuel management, but overall, we kind of, there's a lot of technology on it. We do break it down, but not quite that fine while we're being interviewed.
Yeah.
So another thing that you guys did with this truck is that, I mean, just sticking with the Chevy, that you have a number of different grades and and focusing on different customers who will be interested in buying these trucks.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to us a little bit?
Yeah, you know, customer choice has made us the most popular manufacturer. Overall, our nearest competitor from Dearborn, with our two brands, we outsell them by about 100,000, more than 400,000 more than FCA. So with that, we're able to, you know, give them customer choice. And this vehicle, just in the Chevy, we have eight different trim levels. High value. So at the lower end, the one looking for a real value, we have three trims in there.
That focus on that lower end now, too. I mean, we have this high end, high country here, but that's a small percentage.
Growing, but right. Yes. Yeah, so
we're looking at that lower end now more carefully, right?
Yeah, because the depth and breadth of that, we have a truck for every customer. So on the low end, the high value, we were able to put some trims down there and then make them really cool. Those are the ones you see with the Chevrolet embossed on the front. You can get a Trail Boss.
Chevrolet in letters.
No bow tie.
No bow tie and Chevrolet. Yeah, yes, thank you. Chevrolet spelled out on the front and back. And then you can get a custom Trail Boss. You know, it doesn't have all the same lighting technology, but it's a great-looking truck. You can kind of have the blacked-out kind of version of it. You can have a lifted version. So we have those three models down there. Then in the middle, you know, at the LT, which is kind of the heart of this market, we have the high-volume models. We have that and a new RST model that we put in there. That's going to go right after the core, and you can option those up. Get them up to really nice trucks. And then we go to the high feature, which would be the LTZ and the high country as you see here, and you can take that right up to the top. So that depth and breadth is something we consciously went in at the beginning to have those trim levels.
Now, I got to believe your designers love that breadth of different models.
Yeah.
I got to believe the engineers love it. I got to believe your dealers love it.
Yes.
And I
got to
believe the manufacturing people go, oh no,
yeah.
Customer choice. The complexity is through the roof.
Yeah.
I
got to
believe in wheels and tires alone, the complexity is enormous. Yeah. How do you decide, hey, guys, we're going too far here, or no, we got to push and do even more?
No, that's a great question because we heard a lot of it. We got really smart at the beginning of how marketing came in and took each distinct trim level, and then they put the content on it and packaged it very tightly for that. So if you want this, you got to come up here. If you want this, you got to come up here. So they packaged it really tightly so that we actually have far fewer trim level or, excuse me, build combinations than even the previous.
Even though you've added two models and added all kinds of different things, you have fewer build
combinations. And then the really cool architect piece of it is that when you come in at the beginning, and I can remember the day where I walked in the studio and they want, you know, they want one of everything, and I want it in chrome, I want it in black. And when we went through and said, well, you get three of these, like, surrounds, you get four inserts, you get two different styles of bumpers, you get three different valences here, and they're like, it'll never work, and you can't do that. It's like, no, I want you to mix and match those things. Be smart how you mix and match them. And you come back a month later and look at all the models, and they're like, oh, look at how smart I am, and I'm so proud. and it's like they got really creative in how they mixed and matched. And, you know, someday when we're out looking at all eight models, and I think you guys got a chance to see them when you're out in Wyoming, is that, you know, start to stare them, you can see similarities, but they all look totally different. And we're able to keep those combinations down by that. And the design team hit it out of the park with that.
You know, it's interesting, you know, listening to you talk, and you know, you've said, you're talking about the, you know, you brought back like the early clay model and compared it to what you did with the real thing. You mentioned, you know, marketing coming in and dealing with, you know, the ideas. It sounds like you guys really had a collaborative team that developed this vehicle, and maybe a little bit unusual compared to, I mean, you know, engineers want to do it a certain way. Designers want to have something that is not obtainable. I mean, you've got some incredible lines in the body side, which I'm sure
drove the production people crazy.
Well, and I'm sure that you probably looked at that and said, geez, that's nice, guys, but
That's nice, and but we really enabled when you sat there and looked at that vision model and got everybody to buy into it. And, you know, it is a daunting task because at any one time we could have 10,000 people working on the truck. And to keep all the puppies somewhat in the box, right, and keep them going one direction, we would keep coming back to what the model looked like and what we wanted to do and how we were going to do it and enable that. Because some of the things, like architecting it, you know, even though it's an inch longer, it turns into 4 inches, you know, one in the box is about an inch longer inside. And inside you get 3 more inches of legroom. And then just start to drive those decisions and drive that architecture. You know, we fought over every millimeter of it. But let everybody express what they wanted to have, but then continue to bring them back as here's where we're driving to.
Look, we got to take a quick commercial break right now. BorgWarner makes the show possible, along with a couple of others, and we'll get to them later in the show. And we've also got a ton of questions from the audience coming in. But first, a message from BorgWarner.
The world is changing at an ever-increasing pace. No matter what the mode of transportation, there is always the need for an efficient propulsion system. And that's exactly what BorgWarner has been doing since the earliest days of the automotive industry. We create innovative mobility technologies that reduce energy consumption and emissions while improving performance. Our proven track record has made us an industry leader in forward-looking propulsion solutions for combustion, hybrid, and electric vehicles.
All right, we're back talking all things about the all-new Silverado and GMC Sierra as well. Yep. Hey, we got a question here from Chuck Grenchy that comes in from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. He points out that mid-size pickups are now the size of full-size pickups back in the 50s, 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
He wants to know, have we finally hit as big a dimension as we're going to get in these trucks? And he wants to know, could there be a smaller truck in the future? Would it be viable, like the S10 used to be?
The truck, you know, it feels to me about as big as we're going to have to get it. You know, we have a lot of space in this country to park things and get it around. You know, it feels like it's on the biggest part. It's going to get bigger, taller, and it's like if it gets any wider, I got to put marker lights on it. It has different regulations to it. So that part. Funny he mentions that because, like, our current Colorado, the generation couple generations before the outgoing truck of this. That truck was about the same size when you look at the proportions of them. So yeah, that's a good observation. We've made that too. It feels like we're on the biggest size of that, as well as, you know, for what people want to pay for these things. I don't know if there's much more technology or material you could put on to, you know, bring the weight down and you make it even more fresh. It feels like we're kind of up, you know, leveling out there.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've been talking about the physical aspects of this vehicle, but, you know, what about the content in terms of electronics and technology? I mean, was that something that, you know, was a big concern to you as you developed this car?
Yeah, we're kind of talking before this, right? It's, what did I say? It's a loose collection of sheet metal so they can use it as for their phone and charge their phone.
Keep the rain off the phone charger.
Keep the rain off the phone charger. Yeah, yeah. You know, that was a real consideration up front. You know, from the screen size and the technology, and it has our latest infotainment on it. You know, that's important to drive to that to the cluster, you know, from a 4.2 to an 8-inch screen on the cluster. And then the big technology play that we moved in with this market would be the heads-up display. It's the largest heads-up display in the industry in a truck, let alone a pickup truck. It's 3x7. We can display all that technology. We love that. And kind of like a fighter pilot. You can have the nav over here. You can have the tunes up and the speedo here, and you can see the following of vehicle and what your speed is and blinkers and everything. So we kind of how we parse that out. So yeah, it was a big, you know, that technology piece of it. The HUD, we talked about the dynamic fuel management, all the different things we want to put. Which chargers were we going to put in? Right, the USBs, the micro, and the more common one. And yeah, a lot of that's a real consideration up front.
Okay, we've got a number of phone calls here. Carmen, let's bring the first one in.
Hello, gentlemen. I have a question for Jim Herrick. Jim, I have a business with several Chevrolet trucks. My company uses 1-ton Silverado cab and chassis trucks with bodies on them. I've talked to several GM dealers, and they cannot find or order me a new 3500 cab and chassis. The dealers cannot tell me when I could get a new 3500 cab and chassis. They tell me they don't even know when they would see a 1-ton truck. Do you know when the new regular cab 3500 will be available for customers to purchase? Thank you for your time.
Yep, and I assume he's meaning the next generation of this vehicle. So I'll go with that. You know, no other manufacturer or company will make more truck news in 2019 than us. And so,
i.e., heavy duty coming.
Yeah, heavy duty coming.
So it sounds like
will come next year. The regular cab would be the third in the cadence of that.
So later in the year.
So later in the year, next year would be the heavy duty.
That's when they'll be in dealerships.
That's when, yeah.
Late in the year.
Late in the year, kind of like the same time that this came in, you know, this year.
But you get them out, sounds like you might can make a couple of sales.
Oh yeah, no, they'll be very popular. I drove one last weekend, and you know, we talked about the differentiation between the light duty, you know, and all the different models. We also took that differentiation with the heavy duty and made it even more differentiated than it's ever been. So this customer will be, you know, it's very distinct, and you won't get one confused with a light duty to a heavy duty. And I drove one last week, and this thing's a beast of burden. It's it is so cool. And we have the great Duramax in it. We've got
like a true truck guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And we've got a purpose-built gas engine for it. So we're really excited about that. And we're building the prototypes right now.
I can see the Tim Allen coming out.
Yeah.
Right now.
Oh, yeah, like, hey, what building would you like me to pull down? Yeah. So, yeah, specifically a little later next year.
Yeah. Here's an interesting question. Mike from San Francisco. He says he lives to dream. Any chances will she see a Silverado with a Volt architecture? You know, a hybrid truck, and he says 200 horsepower electric motors at the rear wheels.
Oh yeah, I've heard those urban myths and rumors. You know, not talking about really any future product programs and what it means from a hybrid standpoint. You know, if you ask any truck customer what they're willing to give up for fuel economy, and they'll say nothing, not just – they'll say the word nothing, not they won't speak. It's, they'll say nothing. And, you know, we're – what we've done with the increases here for that, we think from that level, you know, we even have our 2.7 powertrain that's coming out, our propulsion unit that's coming out, you know, compared to the 3.6 Ram with a shiny object on top of it that's supposedly a new engine. You know, we get comparable fuel economy to that, and with better torque, better horsepower, and this thing, it's 380 pounds lighter than the outgoing V6, and gets great fuel economy, and this thing kicks like a mule. I can't wipe the smile off my face when I drive it, so...
Four-cylinder turbo talking about.
Yeah.
Four-cylinder and a full-size pickup.
Yeah.
This is.
I can't wait to drive it.
It's not
I've not had a chance.
This has happened. But.
Right. Yeah. We'll get you guys out in it.
Do you have a diesel for this?
Yeah,
we do. In fact,
you drove one here.
I drove one here.
Listen to he's driving the diesel.
He's driving the
heavy duties, and we're like salivating it.
I told you how excited I was when they told me I got the job. I get even more excited when I'm able to bring these things home. But yeah, the diesel out in the parking lot.
So Gary, you grab them. John, you get the keys.
Yeah.
I'll get us unmiked and we'll get out of here.
Monty's got the keys. In fact, he's out there probably right now. The diesel is awesome. We're building it up right now. We've got a lot of them. You'll probably see some of them running around. It's a 3-liter line 6 diesel. It's a Duramax. We designed it and built it with our team in Italy. And it's really refined. It's just great torque and horsepower, how they set the turbos up for that and what response that we can get with it. It's just fantastic. I think it really brings that diesel customer in, and just can't wipe the smile off my face when I drive.
So it's calibrated for work performance, not for fuel economy.
I wouldn't say that.
So you're getting...
Yeah, we're not going to make any announcements on the fuel economy. You guys may have, you know, seen what was out on the web. I probably read some of that. But, you know, you're smart guys. You're not going to believe everything you read on the Internet. When we bring
not everything.
Not everything. I believe your stuff.
Yeah.
We'll
keep you on the show.
We're going to turn some heads.
Uh-huh. Hey, we got a question here from Pac-Man. He says, I have to know. What was Silverado's team's reaction when they found out Ram fit that ginormous touchscreen into the new 1500? He says, I mean, everything else just seems small now.
Yeah, we got some early pictures of that and saw it. It's like, that's cool. You know, Ram overall, it's a very luxurious truck inside, however, we know that our truck customers are looking for. They're very practical. All truck customers are very practical. Although it's luxurious, you know, they've got stickers on the inside that talk about how you clean all this leather and things like that. Our customers are really looking at durability for it, and on a 6-year loan or a 3-year lease, you know, we questioned that part of it. The other part of it being it gave up a little bit on the function of it. You guys have, I assume you guys have driven it.
Oh yeah,
one today.
Yeah, and so take your eyes off the road to put on the heated seats and some of that functionality. We went down the different. We didn't. Pause and say, oh my God, we got to back up the train here. We as I kind of described earlier with our screens and how we can parse them out and the heads up, we think we have a better solution. I don't know that I have to see downtown Grand Blanc when I'm navigating to Flint.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. All right, you mentioned something. I want to quote you to you again.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Okay.
You've been reading. He's throwing your own words right
okay.
back in your face.
So you said, we set a lofty goal for exceeding the dependability and longevity of the current Silverado. And this goes to your point of your customers want durability.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us what you did to exceed those standards.
We put on this is the most tested Silverado and Sierra that we've ever done. And what we did when we set out as being the kind of the master architect and the chief at the very beginning, we put out some really lofty goals because we know our customers, they talk about what it costs them to operate the vehicle. They want a great-looking truck. They want one that has reasonable fuel economy, and they want one that doesn't cost them an arm and a leg to run. So we set up a couple goals. I said I wanted to have double the captured, what we call captured test fleet miles, than the previous model. I want to put them on the road, something we had never done before, and you guys saw them all camoed up. We took trucks without VINs. We had one of our suppliers, Roush, that were able to mile those trucks up. They could put 1,500 miles on them every day as they drove them. And then we put lofty goals up to how many miles we wanted to have. And I think when we were out in Wyoming, we talked about this. I think I'm now over 5 million miles that we put on this architecture. All the things that you hit the blue OnStar button, you can call up if you have any problems. The engineers comes right to their screen, and they have 24 hours to say what they're going to do about it. Mm-hmm. And so we put some really lofty goals there to you can't misstep on the franchise of the business, and you never want to be able to say, geez, Mary, I wish I would have. So everybody that had a great idea, we used it. We just put out those really, really lofty goals. And, you know, I look at it like this. It's what allows me to put my head on the pillow at night and sleep soundly that we know we've achieved our goal.
1,500 miles a day. That's a lot of miles.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, we got another phone call that we need to bring in, too. Carmen, why don't we bring in the next one?
Greetings, gentlemen. This is Dale Leonard out of Cleveland, Ohio, and I have a question for your guest. I'd like to know why you held back and went with your contemporary styling on the Silverado. One after-hour show, Bob Lutz, who I usually agree with, made the statement that truck owners don't want big, bold styling. Any formerly loyal GM Silverado buyer that I have spoke with went with Dodge and Ford because of the bold look. Could you expound on this?
Sure. We think it has a bold look. It's not just the way it looks, but its proportions and its styles. The hood looks like there's a lot of power in there, and there is a lot of power under the hood. The proportions of the overall truck, that's what they really go for. And our clinic data shows that with the new Silverado, how much they love the boldness of it, the refinement of it, the fit and finish of it, because they do want to see, they do like to see a good looking truck. So, some of our, you look way back what Ram did and kind of where they've come now, different than the one you're driving, right?
They're coming back.
They're coming,
They have a smaller grill. It's
less pronounced big rig fenders, all of that.
Correct.
Yeah, they've settled down.
Yeah. And so, we think we've hit a great theme with this, to get the boldness of it, the proportion, the size, because it's a great look.
Something you didn't change, unless you've got a quick question coming
in,
is something you didn't change is the shifter. Everybody else has gone to push buttons and knobs and all these things, and you kept the column shifter. And that seems like, now old school.
Sure. A lot of our competitors have gone to ones on the center console. Mm-hmm. You got the rotary knob, ETRS part of it. One, the customers really quickly got to, they like the traditional piece of it, as well as they know that the real estate in the center console is downtown Tokyo real estate. Mm-hmm. They told us very clearly they want to be able to put stuff there. They want to be able to reach their controls and not have things in the way. The rotary one, you add quite a bit of expense to that, and something that you may see us do, not exactly that, but you see some of our vehicles coming out in the future. We wanted to make sure.
It looks like early reports on the Escalade based on this gets some form of a rotary shifter. So
I hadn't seen that.
So I would assume that that would be something you're working on for the Suburban and
sure
to follow up.
Yeah, where would you put it? That architecturally, you know, we're just getting started. You're seeing the tip of the iceberg here, if you will. You know, the truck franchise is so huge that you know, some say that you know, life is a marathon, not a sprint. Well, I'm here to tell you, when you launch one of the franchises of the company, it's more like an Ironman race. And I mean that by just a few of us that have done a few Ironman races and know what that means. And you know, you've got to put in the training. You got to know the whole architecture, what it means, and put in the training to have that. As well as then, I've rarely seen anybody come out of the water first and win an Ironman race. Right, when you sit back and look at our whole architecture, and you're kind of alluding to, you'll look back and see some evolution. This is super smart of how these guys did it. They put the right technology in the right spot for the right customer. And when you stand back, we're really proud of where we're going and what we've done and where we're going. And I reckon that you'll be real proud of how smart we were and what we did with it and how we used the whole architecture to our advantage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got time for two quick questions here from the audience, and then we're going to have to wrap this up. DMAC wants to know, do you got adaptive cruise control on this?
We do not. Not in the first year.
Okay. There you go. First year. And then we got one more phone call. Let's bring that in, Carmen.
This is Clem Zorowski from Delmont, Pennsylvania. My question for the gentleman there about the Chevrolet trucks is, why is not the 6.2 engine available across all lines? I am sure there's plenty of people out there would pay a premium to get that engine in a standard short regular cab, short bed truck. Thank you.
You bet. That's a great question. And you know, again, we have six different powertrains that we've rolled out, and we've talked about all of them. Where they mix and match, we're eating an elephant here, and we're going to eat it one bite at a time. But in future, there's future plans to be able to give that choice to what the customer wants.
There you go. So stay tuned, Clem. Sounds like you just nailed it with that question there.
Yeah, we get a lot of those questions. I was prepared.
Tim Herrick, we're going to have to wrap this up right now, but you're part of this show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It's really awesome that we're able to put a truck in the studio, and it really helps.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You get any bigger, you're going to need a bigger studio.
You're going to need a bigger boy.
Real good.
All right.
We're going to take another quick break right now because we got to show the support that Bridgestone and Lear have for this show.
Lear Kinexis offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
All right, we're talking all things automotive here on Autoline After Hours, but it's time for Dr. Data.
Okay, so other people don't know this, but right now it is raining like mad outside. Okay. I mean, the rain's really coming down, and you know, there's been a lot of inclement weather, and a lot of hurricanes have been hitting the country. So, you know, one of the consequences of that is that there tend to be a lot of vehicles that get flooded, right?
Oh.
So, Katie, could you please bring up the first slide here about what we're talking about? So I want you guys to tell me the number of flooded cars that are on U.S. roads in 2018. These are cars that, you know, people probably didn't know that they were buying that were flooded.
They got wet and flooded out.
Flooded out, not good.
Should have been salvage vehicles or maybe have salvage titles in another state.
Just bad news. Okay,
they're on the road, though. Yeah, driving around.
Yes. So it's either 218,885, 330,210, or 478,611 trucks. Okay, this is just the year of 2018.
Just 2018. Just
the year's not even over yet. I'm going to guess the 330,000.
330,000?
I'm going to go with the high number.
Are you going with a high number?
Yeah, because of the the dual impact of the two hurricanes.
So you're saying 478,000.
Yeah.
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 Two hurricanes. You know, I heard on the way over that the Hurricane Michael, which hit the southeast part, knocked out 50% of the pecan crop. So, if you like pecans, you better get your pecans.
Yeah, you're so, not worried about
the price
your vehicle.
So actually, one of you is right, and it's not you. So, Katie, bring it up.
So,
now
what
we're
going to
take this in a slightly different direction here. So,
it's a lot.
Katie, bring up the next one. So the cities with the most flooded cars, okay, so, you know, we're talking about the storms and the hurricanes and whatnot, and superstorms. So Tampa, Houston, Miami, or Chicago, which had the most flooded cars? I won't make you rank them. Just guess the one that has the most flooded cars.
Well, the one that makes the least sense is my choice, Chicago.
Yeah, I'd go Chicago.
Just because you thought that I would just throw something in that was completely...
No, because
you thought I'd throw in something completely crazy?
Because the hurricanes had nothing to do with Tampa, Houston, or Miami. Chicago.
So this is the most flooded cars, Chicago.
Yes.
Yes.
On the road right now.
On the road right now. This goes back to that previous 478,000 number. Boy, you're going to rationalize yourself right onto this one. So
sorry.
You're both wrong. Katie, bring up the answer, please.
Houston. We have a problem.
Wow.
So they shipped them all there.
See, the thing that really surprised me is I thought the answer would be Tampa or Miami.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes the most sense.
Right,
right.
See, but you guys were wrong.
So they got rid of all of their flooded cars from a year ago, right? And then
so there's
now
a whole new
brought
fleet coming
in a whole new fleet. From elsewhere? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying that Carfax found that there's a whole lot of flooded cars out there. Don't buy flooded cars.
That's probably...
There is a website where you can go and check the VIN.
Right, right.
To see it's been flooded.
The Federal Registry...
Yes, right. And I'm blanking out on... Yeah. We did a whole show on it, but was some years ago.
Is it that Texas allows for easy title washing?
I don't know. Or do you remember when Houston was underwater?
Yeah.
So maybe that has more.
Well, yeah. But
all right, let's move on for those. Okay, we're going to move on.
What else, Gary?
Numbers? I do, but we don't want to go down that road necessarily. So we've been talking all about light duty trucks, and our friends at Reuters did an interview with Mike Manley this week.
New CEO at
FCA, and he apparently wants to no longer be the number three in U.S. pickup sales.
I was going to throw that at Tim.
This is a quote. Here's a quote, Manley, quote, "We need to get ourselves into second. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I don't care which of the two I take share from." Yeah. So he's even talking about, we've talked on the show about how they have redone the plant up here in...
they've added essentially a whole nother assembly plant.
In Sterling Heights.
And they're continuing to build the old truck at the same time as the new one. Mm-hmm. They've got the Jeep pickup coming that's going to be introduced at the LA Auto Show later this month. I'm sure he's counting that as part of his pickup market share. Mm-hmm. And there's been talk that Ram will get a version of that Jeep pickup. Mm-hmm. So I got to believe Mike's, almost two more assembly plants worth.
Well, so one of the things that came out in this interview was that you may recall that earlier on they said that Sergio, when he was still alive, said he was going to bring the trucks back from Saltillo, Mexico, and build them all up here. Well, now because of the
USMCA.
Yeah.
Okay. Because of the
new NAFTA.
The new NAFTA.
Rolled right off his tongue.
It did, yeah. And that they may just continue to build them down there to get the capacity they need. Because as you pointed out earlier, months back, that, this whole capacity issue was something that they needed to achieve.
No, that's exactly right. If you keep the heavy duties out of your light duty plant, you can make more light duties. Right. And if you've got, what are they, Saltillo? Is that where they make them in Mexico? Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it's all about money. And FCA put up some good profit numbers, too.
Yeah, they, of course, did the sale or potential sale of Magneti Marelli factor into that?
No, because it hasn't happened yet. Yeah, and they're going to get something like 7 billion euros mm-hmm. out of selling Magneti Marelli. And that's a nice cash fall for mm-hmm. FCA.
So another thing that, speaking of a company that doesn't have a nice cash flow, Faraday Future, the company that had a big introduction, what was it, 3 years ago at CES, where they came out and showed this fantastic vehicle that looked like this would be the future.
Right.
And the FF91 and a former GM guy, Pete Savagian, who had worked on the
EV1
and electrification, senior technology VP. He left this week. The co-founder left.
Yeah.
Now, basically,
Nick Sampson. And when Nick Sampson leaves, and stick a fork in it. This company's done for.
So basically, all of the original guys basically have, like, left. People who work there have been put on furlough.
Yeah. Look, the only thing that's going to save them is if some other billionaire steps up and says, here's all the money that you need. Because they had this Chinese billionaire that had gotten them off the ground. And they did a fantastic job with the car. I mean, there's no problems with the car. It is fantastic. They just don't have any money.
So here's the thing that I want to ask you
Saudis.
Guys.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
So for all the grief that we give to Elon, isn't it the case that this guy, for all of his craziness and eccentricities, that he's been building cars?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's been producing these things. And here are all these other companies that we keep hearing about, and nothing manifests itself.
Well, but there's a couple of key differences here. Tesla brought something new to the party. Tesla brought these. It went with laptop batteries, so-called laptop mm-hmm. batteries. Nobody else in the world has touched this. And they came up with a really innovative way of managing that battery pack. Plus, as Sandy Monroe taught us, Tesla has done brilliant things when it comes to the electronics in their
aviation
car.
Electronics.
And, yeah. But what I'm getting at is they have done stuff nobody else in the auto industry has done. All Faraday is doing is coming to the market and say, hey, we got electrics, too. They haven't done anything innovative that we're aware of, at least, in terms of the batteries or their electronics. The same goes for NIO. The same goes for Lucid. The same goes for Byton. All they're doing is buying stuff from suppliers that anybody can go out and buy from suppliers. And if you're going to go up against the General Motors, the Toyotas, the Mercedes of the world, just buying stuff that anybody can buy, you don't stand a chance. You got to bring something new to the party.
But you could even make the argument, though, that even those guys are not doing as well as Tesla's doing in terms
Tesla,
of
Tesla producing, owns producing the vehicles, electric right? vehicle market. Right.
Well, we ran a thing in Autoline Daily this week. There was this German media outlet that did a long-range test drive. I say long-range. It was done within a day mm-hmm. of a Tesla Model X with, I think it was a 90-kilowatt battery pack, mm-hmm. and a brand-new Jaguar I-Pace. The Tesla is bigger and heavier, and it's been out for a number of years already. It went farther on a charge than the Jaguar did, i.e., it used electricity more efficiently, even though it's bigger and heavier, and it charged faster. So here's this Tesla Silicon Valley startup that's had this model out for a number of years, and the latest, most brilliant thing that Jaguar can put out there is not as efficient. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean about bringing something new to the party that Tesla has done and the other startups have not. And you're right, Gary. Tesla is way out in front in some respects in certain areas of technology than the rest of the industry. That's what it takes to win in the automotive game. Mm-hmm. You can bring something new in styling, but, you know, that goes out of style fairly quick. You can bring new technology, or if you look at like what Toyota did with the Toyota Production System, you can come with a totally new manufacturing process that wipes everybody out from a cost standpoint. So unless you're bringing something new to the party, you don't stand a chance against the entrenched manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. So the monthly sales came out, today? Did you see anything that surprised you?
I saw bits and pieces. No, I mean, you know, what I saw was all these analysts wringing their hands last week. All sales are going to be down, mm-hmm. and they are down compared to last year. But last year was a blowout month because of the impact of the hurricanes in September, going back to your numbers.
That goes back to all those flooded cars.
Dr. Data keeps feeding on this.
We're just trying to you know, just do this angle here.
I haven't seen, because the sales have been coming in dribs and drabs all day long. I haven't seen the final total, but it looks like the SAR is going to be about 17.4 million. That's what Ward's predicted.
That is
a hell of a good number.
Yeah.
I mean, it's astonishing that we're continuing to see the market as strong as it is.
And it sounds like analysts are saying you're not seeing impact from interest rates yet.
Right.
So there's not that need to throw a bunch of money on the hood to overcome.
We'll see. You know,
it's early, eh? So there's still a couple months left in the year.
So this is just a bizarre, quirky number that it just caught my eye. And so rather than just looking at monthly sales, I look at the calendar year to date sales to see how well the car is doing. So just think of this number. Prius, okay, this would be all the Prius models. So 75,231 they've sold so far this year, okay? All of the Lexus cars sold was 75,331. It's just like, it's within 100. The Prius, Lexus.
All of Lexus.
And then the Sienna minivan, 74,227, less than the Prius. I mean, that number of the Prius selling all Lexus cars is just amazing to me. And by the way, Prius is down 17.4% this year.
Yeah.
You want to put it all in context, though? This was, I think, the eighth month in a row that F-Series sold 700,000 or better.
Yeah, but their sales were down.
In a month.
Yeah, but their sales were down substantially, right, Gary?
Of course, that includes Super Duties and all of that.
So last year they sold 75,974 in the month of October. This year it was 70,438. So they were down
70,000.
So they were down 7.3% from last October.
Yeah, but 5,000 trucks fewer. Yeah. Multiply that times, I don't know, $45,000. You're talking a substantial hit from revenue.
Yeah, I'll tell you. But, I mean, you look at that, the red ink at Lincoln is just phenomenal. The only vehicle that doesn't have a minus sign is the Lincoln Navigator.
Right. They did less than 8,000, right,
for the month. They sold a ton of them, apparently.
The entire brand.
California. They can't keep them on the lots.
Navigator.
Yeah. 12 days on the lot.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Navigator, not
Navigator. Yeah.
They were Lincoln, under 8,000 units.
Yeah, Lincoln
units
brand, 7,574.
And those are like minting money, you know.
The Navigator?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't sell that many.
Right.
What'd they sell?
Right.
Not even 3,000, right?
Navigators?
Yeah.
1,115.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, yeah, they're making a lot of money on each one, but they're not selling whole lot of them. You know, compare that. I was going to say compare it to Escalade, but General Motors doesn't put out.
Yeah, we can't find that. So sorry about
we'll
that.
We'll have to wait until the end of the quarter or something. Right.
All right. Yeah. So in better news, in racing, and you're a big Formula One fan. I know that you are obsessed by that, and your wife probably wants to throw you out of the house.
Oh yeah, she doesn't watch.
And so Lewis Hamilton won his fifth Formula One championship. What do you make of that?
Look, it's an extraordinary achievement.
Puts him in league with what? Fangio?
Fangio.
Well, yes and no.
I thought there was one.
Michael Schumacher, has won seven.
And I thought Senna is not in that list.
Well, you know, Senna got killed.
Right.
And probably would have won another championship or two.
Yeah.
But here's my take on, you know, how do you compare the greatest? I got to say, I'm biased in this. The first interview I ever did was with Juan Manuel Fangio. I didn't even have a job. I was just out of college. And me and a really good buddy of mine decided we were going to rebuild a 1965 Chevrolet panel truck and drive it from Detroit all the way to the tip of South America. And long story short, when I got to Argentina, I thought, wow, I should do an interview with Juan Manuel Fangio. And I knew at the time that he was the president of Mercedes-Benz Argentina. So I got out the phone book, remember those, and looked up Mercedes-Benz Argentina and rang them up and said, could you connect me with Mr. Fangio? And it's like, well, why? Who are you? And it's like, well, I'm John McElroy, and I'm here from the United States, and I would like to do an interview with him. And lo and behold, I got through and went to his office. Wow. This was all in Spanish. I speak reasonably good Spanish. Okay. And he was very gracious, and he spent an hour to an hour and a half and just regaled me with his life story. And I'm scribbling notes like furious on this. And my buddy who traveled with me took all these kinds of pictures and everything like that. So anyway, I'm biased. Fangio is a god to me. But here's my comparison. They both had, and here we got a great shot up on the screen of him driving a Mercedes-Benz.
Right.
And Fangio did not win his first championship until he was 40 years old.
Ooh.
Went on to win four more after that, five. He won his last one when he was 46 years old. These days in Formula One, you're long gone from the sport by the time you turn 40.
Well, and look at that car.
I
mean,
you had to drive those suckers.
Just the rubber alone.
But look, the modern day
all that driver, contact patch is one tire.
That's right. But I don't say that. Oh, it was tougher then than it was now. But when I look at the stats, Fangio was on the pole in 55% of the Grand Prix he participated in.
Yeah.
Lewis, who's one of the best right now of all times, is at about 33%.
Mm-hmm.
Fangio won 46% of the races that he entered. I mean, he won every other race just about.
Yeah.
Lewis is way below that. I think he's, again, around 33%. So when I – now, in Fangio's day, they only had eight Grand Prix a year. You know, today they have, what is it, 20, 21?
So the
modern-day Grand Prix driver wins far more races than Fangio ever did. But he won five championships with four different teams. In the modern era like we have today, Mercedes becomes dominant and wins everything for years. You know, before that, it was, you know, Ferrari with Schumacher was dominant. There was one year, I think, was it McLaren? I think it was, won every single race in the season.
Mm-hmm.
So you get this dominance that we didn't see in Fangio's day.
It's technology. You know, it's not just, it's drivers to some extent, but sometimes it's they've figured out something in the rules that allows them to get that extra little bit, and then they become dominant for a season, and then it's either ruled out.
No, they become dominant for a year.
Right.
Until they change the rules.
Until they change the rules, or everybody catches up.
So here's a rather fascinating thing about Lewis Hamilton. He won his first championship in 2008. He didn't win his second championship until 2014. 6 year between the first.
6 year gap.
So Fangio, first one was in 1951. The second one was in 1954. Much more concentrated. So, you know, for Hamilton,
but he was an older guy. He had to. I mean, he's got a snap.
Well, he didn't have a career as long as Hamilton's had. But you got to give it up for these guys. I mean, to do that.
For Mercedes to do what it's been doing for the last few years, for Hamilton to achieve this, and look, you know, he's got a teammate, Valtteri Bottas, who is a really good driver. You know, they had what's his name.
That he was fighting with all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Who also got a championship. But Lewis has been.
Oh, Vettel.
Not Vettel.
Button.
Not Jeremy Button. He never won anything.
God, I can see. No, he's the son of another.
Yeah. Who won?
See his face. Why can't we think of his name?
No, not Raikkonen. I know who you're talking about.
Okay.
All right.
This is embarrassing.
Yeah.
This is what happens.
Yeah. When your brain goes.
When you get all excited.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, the point is that, you know, drivers still count for a lot. You know, Hamilton's better than his teammate. You know, Vettel is better than his teammate. You know, you just go through the field and you give these drivers two equal cars, one always comes out better than the other.
So do you think if we took
Nico Rosberg
Nico Rosberg.
There
Thank
we
you
go.
For that, Sean.
Yes, Rosberg.
Right.
Yes. Jeez. Good. Yeah.
And he's a commentator on the Sky coverage of F1. I see him every weekend, but I just blanked out on his name. So what? Time to wrap up, or you got another topic?
We
could go on forever.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, let's
F1.
Wrap it up.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
So we go out on a high note here. See? Okay.
There we go.
Good. Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
Good for him.
No floods.
No Hamilton. Floods. Yeah.
Bob Gritzinger, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Great to be
Always
here.
Good to have you here.
Always love it.
And be careful with that ram out there. It's slippery.
That's right. Yeah. Mm. Number two. Could be number two before we know it.
Well, good. Gary, great to see you again.
Okay.
Of course, want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems. And by BorgWarner, propulsion solutions that support a clean, energy-efficient world.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.